everyone. Welcome back to Women Making History. I know it's been a long while since I've released an episode. I am so happy to be back, and I hope you will all continue to enjoy the stories of the women who had a major hand in shaping the way the world still is today. Life got a little crazy and busy for me since the last episode, but I have refocused and I am ready to get back to what makes me happy. I am sure you all can relate with the way this past year and a half has gone for everyone all over the world. With that being said, if you haven't listened to part one of Isabel of Castile, I highly suggest you do so you won't be lost this episode. In the last episode, we talked about Isabel's early life up until she was crowned Queen of Castile. Even though she was royal, she definitely didn't have it easy. She had to grow up quick and outsmart a man, her half-brother, twice her age, in order to survive and eventually claim her birthright, the title of Queen of Castile. In this episode, I will be discussing her reign, the challenges she faced and how she overcame them, her accomplishment, her downfalls, and everything in between. She was strong-willed with a mind of her own that made her into a force to be reckoned with that is still talked about today, but not always for a good reason. We ended the last episode with Isabel being crowned Queen of Castile. She was in Segovia when King Henry died, and as I mentioned before, Segovia was secured for her claim to the throne, supported by an important group of Castilian nobles, which included Cardinal Pedro González de Mendoza, the Constable of Castile, as well as the Admiral who was related to Ferdinand's mother. So 2 days after King Henry died, Isabel was crowned Queen of Castile on December 13, 1474. What a way to start the holiday season! She did not have an easy first few years as queen, however. Money was tight for both kingdoms, so Isabella and Ferdinand had to be frugal and very meticulous about their spending. On top of this, Princess Joan, Henry V's daughter, continued to be a thorn in Isabella's side. Joan fled to Portugal to the court of her uncle, King Afonso V. He championed her right to the Castilian throne, and he got France to support her claim as well. Joan had other champions still in Castile, too, who included the Archbishop of Toledo, the Master of Calatrava, which was a very influential military order, and the powerful and young Marquis de Villena. King Afonso V hurried to invade Castile. Once he was in Castile, he betrothed himself to Joan, his niece. 4 years of civil war ensued. Throughout these 4 years of strife and civil war, Isabel and Ferdinand worked as a team. Isabel did not shy away when it came to war and battle. While she did not lead her troops into battle with her sword in hand, she did accompany them on every campaign and was responsible for plotting their strategy and tactics for her generals. During these 4 years, she and Ferdinand would beat the invaders back and subjugated renegade and rebellious towns, fortresses, and points of power that had developed over time. They were quite the force to be reckoned with. Needless to say, these 4 years of civil war ended in defeat for Isabel's Castilian opponents and for the Portuguese king on February 24, 1479. As it still is today, war is an expensive endeavor, and this did not help their finances. That same year, Ferdinand's father, King John II of Aragon, passed away. Upon his death, Castile and Aragon came together through their rulers, and that was the beginning of Spain as we know it today. This was the beginning of a united country. It would still be years before their countries would be united politically as well, but everything has to start somewhere. Isabel and Ferdinand were a united front on almost all matters. Because of this, sometimes it can be hard to distinguish her accomplishments during her reign from those of Ferdinand's. Isabel played a large part in establishing the court of Castile as the center of influence. Isabel herself, by all accounts, could make for a striking, if not intimidating, figure. She had blue eyes and chestnut-colored hair. She wore magnificently ornate and beautiful dresses and jewels. The only thing that matched her display at court was the religious fervor there. Isabel was intensely pious and orthodox in her belief, as well as Ferdinand. She expected everyone to be as devout as she was, because to her, that was the one true way to be faithful to God. Even as pious and as devout as Isabel was to God and to the Catholic Church, she could be both obstinate and imperious in her dealings with the papacy, especially when she thought the Pope was making bad appointments to Spanish benefices, or if she felt that the Pope was in any way infringing on the customary rights of the crown over Spanish churches. Isabel and Ferdinand were even given the title the Catholic Monarchs by Pope Alexander VI in recognition of their role in purifying the faith. That will make more sense later in this episode. Now, some historians would argue that in a time when women ascending the throne was rare and holding on to said throne without dwindling into a consort, rarer still, Isabel was able to do so because she was actively involved in waging war. She was Castile's commander in general and one of the greatest quartermasters in history. As Castile was at war for most of her reign, I would have to agree with this argument. If she hadn't been involved with the decisions, strategy, and movement of the wars that went on during her reign, she may have just been another queen in the annals of history that was easily forgotten. However, other historians also argue that she was a bigoted, fanatical destroyer of other cultures. I'm sure you've heard of the Spanish Inquisition. In case you haven't, the Spanish Inquisition was a judicial institution that started in 1478, whose main purpose was to combat heresy in Spain. Anyone who was other than Catholic, mainly Jewish people and then Muslim people, were subject to brutality that is still incomprehensible today. The main purpose of the Inquisition was to expel non-Christians and doubtful converts. The Inquisition was, believe it or not, a popular movement among the Catholics. The officers of the Inquisition would go to known Jewish homes that had converted to Catholicism to try to catch them still worshiping their old religion. They would then take them, torture them, and sometimes kill them. Their brutal methods led to widespread death and suffering. Sound familiar? Yep, this was done under the guidance and direction of Isabel of Castile. This Inquisition went on until 1834. This turned out to be a major mistake on Isabella's part because with the expulsion of the Jews went the economic stability of her country. The Spanish Inquisition is one of her legacies that would have been better never to have existed. There was also the Reconquista, which was started in 1482. Being a staunch Catholic, she wanted to banish all Moors, Muslim people, from her country and reclaim it. To end the Reconquista, she was determined to take over the Kingdom of Granada, the last Muslim stronghold in Spain. She and Ferdinand set up a foreign headquarters at Santa Fe in 1491, and they stayed there until they were victorious. On January 2, 1492, Isabel and Ferdinand defeated the Nazarene dynasty and claimed Granada as part of Spain. During the 10 years of warfare to end the Reconquista, however, Isabel was responsible for improved methods of supply and the establishment of a military hospital that would later become known as the Queen's Hospital. This conquest greatly strained the finances of Castile that were already strained to begin with. While they were still at Santa Fe, Christopher Columbus visited Queen Isabel in 1492. He was wanting to enlist her support for his upcoming voyage to the New World. As we have already established, Castile's finances were strained, and there most likely wasn't very much in her coffers to offer to Columbus. This was an opportunity to expand her kingdom across the ocean with unknown and untold riches, though. This was not something she could pass up. This is where the legend of Isabel offering her jewels to help finance Columbus's voyage comes up. Well, that's a myth. Isabel did not give him jewels to pawn off to finance his voyage. But Columbus did secure limited financial support from her, most likely all that she could afford. Her gamble was a success, and as a result of this voyage, as we were all taught in first grade, Christopher Columbus sailed across the Atlantic and found a new world, where he established a European settlement. The new world that was discovered as a result of the voyage financed by Isabel was annexed to the Crown of Castile with papal confirmation, thereby expanding her kingdom. Isabel, being the staunch and devoted Catholic monarch that she was, saw this as an opportunity to spread Christianity. She did dictate that native people to be treated humanely and converted to Christianity. This was seldom the case, however. In most cases, the process of converting the native people to Christianity was brutal. When Christopher Columbus brought back some native people to her from his voyage, she ordered that they be returned and freed and demanded that they be treated fairly. Unfortunately, as we know from history and hindsight, that wasn't the case. I always wonder in these cases if the monarchs knew what was actually going on, and if they did, what did they think about it? Anyway, Columbus also brought back animals, silver, and gold from the New World, much to Isabel's delight. Her coffers still needed to be lined from the strains of the Civil War and the Reconquista. Throughout her reign, Isabel was a patron of scholars and artists. She established educational institutions and built up a large collection of artwork. She even learned Latin as an adult and was very well read. Being well educated was very rare for a woman in her time, even a royal one. Isabel made sure her own daughters were educated along with her son. Isabel had 5 children with Ferdinand, 4 daughters, and 1 son and heir. Much to Isabel's sorrow, her only son and heir passed away at the age of 19 without any heirs of his own. Her last decade of life was riddled with tragedy after tragedy. Her oldest daughter, Isabella, was widowed but then married again. After her second marriage, she died in childbirth with her son, Isabel's grandson, following her 2 years later. Isabel's daughter, Juana, married Philip the Handsome and had a notoriously troubled marriage. After his death, Juana kept his body with her for an inordinate amount of time and was rumored to have gone mad. This earned her the nickname of Juana la Loca. Isabel's most famous daughter was the long-suffering first wife of King Henry VIII of England, Catherine of Aragon, who I do plan on doing a podcast episode on in the future. It seems that none of her plans for her children panned out the way she was hoping they would. Isabel was constantly worried about the succession of Spain and was consumed with administration and politics. Her golden years didn't seem so much golden as they did black and tedious. Throughout Isabel's long reign, she always strove to strengthen royal authority. After almost 2 months of suffering with fever and dropsy and years of sorrow and anxiety, Isabel stopped the prayer processions and all further intercessions. She knew this was the end and was prepared for death. She signed her last will and testament on October 12th, declaring that her mind was healthy even though her body was infirm. Devoutly religious to the very end, she begged the Virgin Mary, Saint Michael, and the saints to intercede for her at her judgment. As she had in life, she charged her successors to honor God, protect and defend the Holy Mother Church, proceed in the conquest of Africa from the infidels, and support the Holy Inquisition in the fight against the depraved heretics. It is no surprise that she feared the vengeance of the devil for his minions, to whom she referred to as the Jews and Muslims and other heretics, to who she had given no quarter or mercy her entire life. Although, she followed this up with a request that the Indians in the New World be treated kindly. Isabel died on Tuesday, November 12, 1504, between 11 and 12 o'clock after receiving the last rites. Isabel was 53 years old. That seems young to us, but in the 14 and 1500s, that would have seemed ancient considering the average life expectancy was only around 45 years. At the time of her death, Isabel had been Queen of Castile for 30 years and joint ruler of Castile and Aragon with Ferdinand for 25 years. She was placed in a plain coffin covered with leather and tied with cords. She was carried behind a cross draped in black cloth across the country through torrents of rain and flooded rivers to reach Granada. Isabel was interred in the Franciscan monastery at the Alhambra. Ferdinand would join her there after his death in 1516. Isabel's legacy was undoubtable. Her and Ferdinand's achievements were remarkable. Spain was united, under the crown, power was centralized, the Reconquista was successfully concluded, the Catholic Church was reformed, and through Columbus's discovery of the New World under Isabel's patronage, Spain was set on the course to become the first modern world power. Isabel's good sense and statesmanship were reflected in everything she had done, as well as being equally reflected in her will and codicil. Without Isabel, would Spain even exist as a country today? For all of Isabel's good and bad traits and decisions, she was a woman far ahead of her time. She was intelligent, fearless, determined, and steadfast in a time where women were meant to be meek and subservient. Isabel forged an empire all while raising children and being a wife. She was the quintessential modern-day woman in the late Middle Ages. She never wavered in her beliefs and convictions and set up her kingdom for success. However, a lot of people still criticize her for her persecution of basically anyone who wasn't a Catholic. Lover or hater, Isabel is a woman who made history, whose legacy still lives on today. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of Women Making History. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on any of the latest episodes. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Women Making History to keep up with all of the latest updates and to let me know who you would like to hear about in future episodes. And remember, go out and make a difference. Until next time, bye!